Good evening, Demon fans, and welcome back to the Demonland podcast. My name is Andy, and I hope you're all still basking in the glory of Melbourne's round one win over the Saints at the MCG. Fingers crossed the momentum keeps rolling as we head across the Nullarbor to take on Fremantle on Saturday night. Now you might be wondering why the podcast has popped up in your feed again this week, and midweek no less. As mentioned on the last show, I've been on a bit of a mission to trim the runtime of the main podcast. One of the ways we managed to bring the usual 2 hours and change down to around an hour and a half was by cutting the match summary and tightening up the questions segment of the show. Cutting the match summary was the easy part because anyone listening to a niche podcast about the Demons a day or two after the game has been played, they already know how it all played out. Our job isn't really to retell the story beat for beat, but to dig into why it unfolded the way it did, what stood out, and how we felt about it all once the dust settled. The listener questions and comments fill that role, and they're a huge part of what makes this show what it is. They help shape the content, guide the discussion, and really give the podcast its connection to the Demonland Forum. This podcast is, after all, an extension of that forum, and it's the strength of the Demonland community that makes the whole thing so worthwhile. But I'm also conscious that we often get some overlap in the questions and comments, so this week I tried to streamline that a little bit while still making sure that the people who take the time to contribute remain a central part of the show. Which brings us to this particular episode. What we're presenting tonight is a companion podcast, an offshoot of the main show. As part of the effort to trim the rundown of the regular podcast, we've been looking at which segments could be reshaped without losing what makes them valuable. And one segment that naturally came into focus was Bin Man Stats Files. And not because it isn't important, and that's quite the opposite. It's because such a substantial and much-loved part of the show, it deserves a little bit of room to breathe. The Stats Files is one of the things that gives this podcast its unique flavour, but it also takes up a fair bit of airtime and, just as importantly, a lot of preparation from Bin Man behind the scenes, especially with the tight turnaround after those Sunday late afternoon games. So rather than lose it all together, we're evolving the format a bit. We'll still bring you an abridged version of the Stats Files on the main podcast, and you heard that the other night. But for those of you who really like to sink your teeth into the numbers, we're launching this midweek companion pod featuring the full-length version. And the timing actually works out well too doing it this year, because there'll be a couple of stretches this season when I'm away and unable to host. I've got 3 weeks that I'm away in April, another two in July. No, as I said on the pod the other night, I'm not going to the snow. And much like we did a couple of years ago when I was in the States, Bin Man will steer the ship during those weeks. He'll present the Stats Files. He'll perhaps may cover a couple of the topics during the week if he has time to do that. So for fans of the Stats Files, don't worry. It isn't going anywhere. It's just getting its own stage. And this podcast tonight is its debut. So without further ado, Bin Man, take it away with your long form Stats Files.
Big hello to Demonlanders, Demon fans, and people listening to this inaugural edition of the Stats File 2026, an offshoot of the Demonland podcast, part of the ever-expanding Demonland universe. Just a bit of background, I'm Bin Man. Hello to punters out there. This is probably the most niche of niche podcasts. It's for Demon fans and for people who are into data and data analysis. This, as I said, is an offshoot of the Demonland podcast. I've been doing a Stats File for the last couple of seasons, and in our effort to trim the runtime of the Demonland podcast, we thought we'd do a separate standalone pod where I'll do a bit of a deep dive into the stats and the and use that to help me and listeners understand the game, what we watched, why we won, why we lost, what the opposition did well, what the trends are in the game. The it's the numbers and the data I'm looking at are based on Willow ratings in predominantly, not entirely. Willow ratings, Google that, fantastic site for both tennis and AFL, but I think the best AFL site for data, really navigable, excellent resource. And each week there's a thread on Demonland, the Footy Forum, 2026, stats file 2026. And after each game, Willow puts up all the key stats in tables. And then there's conversation around that. And really this sort of mini pod is an effort to distill some of that conversation. And in a way, as I say, it's a fairly niche sort of effort at podcast because that thread's got its own sort of audio podcast. Part of the thinking is Andy's going to be away on the, won't be able to do the main pod two or three times during the season. So we thought that this could be a bridge and make sure that there's content in the two or three games that Andy will miss. I'm going to try and keep it as sort of tight as possible. 20 minutes is what I'm aiming for. Regular listeners to the Demonland podcast will know that probably economy of words is not my strength, but I will try to sort of zero in on the key stats and keep it tight. I haven't really got an agenda. I'm going to use the table and the stats that Willow puts up on Demonland as the structure for each show, but also might, you know, as the season goes, do a little bit of comparative sort of analysis between where we are and the leading teams are. So to get a sense of how we're traveling from a statistical point of view. And just with that, you know, for me, data, I really get the idea you can overanalyze footy. And for me, I come at it eyes first. So I love to watch a game of footy, then I love to watch the replay. And then and only then I look at the data to help me understand and unpack what I saw. And I find it a really effective way to help me understand the game of footy, which tactically is, you know, is an incredible game in the speed at which it evolves. Goody's often said their game, you know, the actual tactics will shift two or three times within a season. And just on that, I think that's exactly what will happen during this season. There's a lot of talk, of course, about the high scoring and the fastball movement. Some of the rule changes have no doubt had that effect, but I think that we'll see the pendulum swing back to defense as the season goes on, and particularly come finals. And once again, pressure and contest will remain king once we get to the finals. So without further ado, I'm just going to sort of jump into the stats. As I said, there's not, I haven't got a really sort of clear sort of structure for it, but I'm going to work through that table and see what the show looks like and how it shapes up. I will do my best to bring it under 20 minutes so people can listen to it in a single bite. I won't really talk about players, the ratings. I'll do that on the main show unless there's a particular player I want to highlight and drill down onto their numbers. I'm going to start in a sort of unusual spot because I'm interested in the sort of swing away from sort of pressure at the moment. The last few years, pressure has been king, and come finals, pressure is king. Forces turnovers, wins the ball. But at the moment, there's certainly, you know, my sense was watching our game that the pressure was low, and in large part because the way the pressure ratings are rated is that there's a huge emphasis on physical pressure acts. They're the high scoring ones, like tackles, but things like chasing, corralling, you get less of them. And as the, you know, in open games with less stoppages and lots of outside run, you certainly get, you know, you get less opportunity for those physical acts and those pressure that really pumps it up. So in this match, our, you know, remembering 180 is the, is considered AFL average, and sort of the baseline, for pressure. Our, pressure rating in this game was 165, which is very low. Theirs was 172, so we were minus seven. We only had one quarter where we had high pressure rating, which was our third quarter, 177 to 172. My sense was that's probably likely to be a competition-wide trend at the moment. I tried to do a bit of work, sort of analysis to try and find that out, to test that hypothesis using AI, and it really shows the weaknesses of it because all of that, this information is often behind paywalls and whatnot. So ask Willow, and that's something that that thread on Demonland is terrific for. You can put a question to Willow and he'll often respond. And he did respond to that question because, you know, as I said, I think it'll be a trend for us for at least a while and the competition. You know, we'll see a drop off in that, those pressure ratings. And, Willow was good enough to come back with an answer and that yes, low pressure was typical across the whole round. Only two teams averaged 180 plus, which is remarkable. No team averaged or got to 200 pressure rating, which is considered elite. And, you know, most rounds last year, two or three teams, winning teams would have had that. So at the moment, it's definitely a trend that, that is happening. Winning post-clearance contested possession didn't correlate with winning as much as in 23-25. So 65% of the times teams that won that post-clearance contested possession won the game in that period. But back to 21-22 and you know, when we won a flag and under Goodwin's famous defense, the defense first philosophy, that was 75%. So still important, and perhaps not as important as it was, and it will most definitely become important as we move forward. Going back to a sort of a key stat, obviously, is the winning score. Massive issue for us last year. You know, we talked about it all season on the podcast, how many games that we kicked ourselves out of, and for want of more accurate kicking, we would have won. And it was really interesting to hear Lyon in his presser sort of talk to that point, actually, because you know, he said that if they were a bit more efficient going forward, and I'm not quite sure if he meant accuracy or just going inside 50, then they might have won the game. But in fact, the expected score, both teams were almost bang on the expected score. So our expected score was 122.5 and we scored 120. Their expected score was 107.2 and they scored 107. So, you know, no complaints from either side from that perspective. In terms of us wasting opportunity. So, you know, it was terrific to take our chances. The best example of that, of course, was Rue, who was kicked 6-1 and in a terrific kicking performance. And I watched the replay again last night. I've forgotten that one of his goals, the one Maxi sort of shepherded through, he kicked that off one step from inside 50. That was an impressive kick, and his performance was terrific. Last year, we talked about territory, and, you know, back in the day, 21-22, territory and forward half 40, you know, the trap it in forward was Goody's mantra for a long time. That isn't as influential anymore as it was, but you know, so but we were 54% of the time in our forward half, so we won that battle in that sense. Our score sources were interesting. We scored 70 points on turnover. We did a great job of burning them on turnover. Some of their kicking was appalling, but we did a terrific job. Turnover has been for the last two or three years the key score source for all teams. It was stoppages 5-6 years ago and clearances. It's now turnover, has been for two or three seasons. We scored 70 points. They scored 56 points. They scored 8-8 on turnover. So I think that's important to note. My concern a little bit about us this year is our defense. I thought our defense was our biggest weakness last year. There was a lot of emphasis on our forward line and our entries in forward line, and justifiably so. But really, it was our defensive system that I think really hurt us, and our inability to defend turnover. That's going to be a challenge for us this year. I think King is quite rightly, we've got enough players who've got the DNA of importance of defense and how to play it. I think he's gone the other way to, for instance, Mitchell did at Hawthorn, and is trying to embed a fast playing style, and then I suspect we'll wind back a little bit and become a little bit more defensive. But they scored 56, so we're plus 14 on turnover, which was good, but they scored 8-8 and they really didn't hurt us on turnover in the same way. So we had 15 scoring shots on our turnover. We kicked 11-4. They had 16 shots at goal, but kicked 8-8. So that difference between the two sides sort of was as much about anything as accuracy. And, you know, you come up against a side like Frio, who will hurt us on turnover much more. And so it's definitely a watch that I'll be focused on, is how well we defend turnover, because I think that's really going to be the critical thing for success this year. All the emphasis will be on the attacking offensive play, because it's great for telly, it's exciting, but really it's, you know, the best teams, premiership teams always are in top four defensive teams, and so that's where we need to be. And I do worry a little bit about, you know, how we will travel in that space. A lot of the numbers between the two sides were really, really similar. So there was hard, you know, they actually played it pretty well, the Saints. And, you know, they were similar in a lot of ways. But, like, for instance, stoppages, we scored 13 points in this game from kick-in. From stoppages, we scored 22. They scored 30, though, from stoppage around the ground stoppage, so plus 8, which was interesting given Maxi played so well. So, and from centre bounces, it was 15 all. So as exciting as those centre bounces were, it was interesting. Both teams only scored 15 points from those very sort of open setups and structures that both teams employed for the centre bounces. I thought that was interesting because they didn't actually, it was only 30 points in a game in which so many goals were kicked. Only 30 points in total were scored from the a set of bounces, which I found interesting. In terms of where we started our scoring, our defensive 50, 26 of our points came from our defensive inside defensive 50, 26 came from defensive midfield, which is that central area between the arcs, 15, as I said, from center bounces. Attacking midfield forward of center, 39 points, which is excellent. And then we started 14 of our points for inside 50 to 19. In terms of the comparative to St Kilda, where we had positive in all of them, but the main one was attacking midfield. We scored 16 more points than them from attacking midfield. I talked about this last year a lot in terms of points from defensive half. We had 52 points from our defensive half this year. They had 50. So, you know, bang on. That's moving it from defensive half's interesting because it's actually just the line in the center, and so everything on that side of the ground. I talked on the podcast, we did a thing about center bouncer attendances, but just quickly, we had 9 players. So Max Gorn, obviously, Cozzy at 24 center bounce attendances, Jack Steele 22, Caleb Windsor 20, Trent Rivers 16, Colt 9, and not all of them were on NAS, which was interesting. Harvey Langford, who was predominantly on the wing, he came in 7 times. Sparrow was also 7 times. Petty rucked 4 times. Xavier Lindsay came in a couple of times, which I thought was interesting, and in that he came in, I think, the last quarter at Salem. So I think that's 9 midfielders going in there, which is a big change to the way, you know, traditionally we've done our midfield, where you have a starting midfield and fewer players rotating through it. So I think that that's a really fascinating sort of evolution of the game, and where Kings where King is sort of looking for us to play. So, you know, the way I sort of think about it is that there was the starting mid miles being replaced by core mids, and the core mids are Coz, Steele, Rivers, and Windsor, and then a bunch of others who will roll through the middle, like Langford, who otherwise will play in the wing, Sparrow, Colt, Lindsay. I think even Cully might come through, and just on that. So it's a really interesting mix of players and skill sets, but one of the really notable things is how many of them are really quite big boys. Lindsay's a big boy, Langford's a big boy, Cully's a big boy, Rivers is solid, Steele is solid. So that's a, you know, it's a really fascinating sort of look at how, you know, on the weekend was a really fascinating look with how this is going to look in terms of the midfield rotation. Exciting. I really love to see those players roll, you know, multiple players roll through, and I've often wondered why that doesn't happen more often. As George was talking about on the podcast, I think we're really implementing one of the aspects of Brisbane's successful strategy of having multiple players who can play in multiple positions, so flexible, so almost utility types who can come in, play some midfield minutes, but also play the wing, play high half forward, and can kick goals. That's going to be critical for us. Our midfield squad of midfielders has got to start kicking goals. So that was a big weakness for us last year. If you think about Brisbane's lineup, they've got so many of those mid-size players, Bailey being the best example, who are goal kickers, you know, and also aerial threats. So Cully and Langford all are really excellent aerial threats. One of the big things, obviously, is in footy now, you play this transition game. It's all about turnover. You've got to reduce turnover. You do that by two things, by, you know, kicking efficiency being one of the key ones. Another aspect is retaining the ball inside 50. That was a big weakness for us last year. In 2025, we only retained the football when we kicked it inside 50, 46.2% of the time. Small sample size, so you know, let's see how it washes out over the next six or seven games. But on the weekend, it was 67.4% of the time that we kicked inside 50, we retained the ball, which was a big factor in why we won. They were only 56.8% of the time they retained the footy when they went inside inside 50. That was a huge factor. You know, obviously retention helps when you are spotting up leading forwards and the space that's created by this fast sort of offside style that, as Lyon described it, which I thought was curious the way he talked about it. They were offside a lot too. I think that's the modern footy of players, sort of what used to be called cheating, but now is encouraged, obviously, of getting ahead of the ball, much like the amazing goal Latrell kicked where he bolted ahead of the ball. We could see what the turnover, and when CJ got that turnover, he was off to the races and was already 50, 60 metres ahead of the ball by the time it got to Colt, and Colt was able to spot him up. So that was an impressive stat, and I'll look at that all season in terms of following that, because I think retaining it inside 50 obviously speaks to hitting up forward, but also inside 50 pressure. Despite what the sort of, you know, the talk will be, King has made it clear he's big on territory, so there'll be, you know, there will be as long a kicks under King as I think there were under Goodwin, and that certainly picked up. So that's reflected at least in this one game. Meters gained per kick was 27.9. In 25, it was 26.2. So, you know, slightly longer than last year, which might surprise some people, but not me. Because King has made it clear he's a territory team. So sure, while, you know, we were trying to hit up our leading forwards, when there wasn't an option forward, if you look, you know, watching the replay, it was really evident how often they kicked long inside our 50. The benefit, though, is we're kicking long into inside 50 with fewer people in there, so there's less aerial congestion, there's less sort of craziness inside 50, and more opportunity for those small crummers to have some space when the ball isn't marked to hit the ground and you know, look to take advantage of those long kicks inside 50. The big one, though, this is a statistical banana, I mentioned this on the podcast, is meters gained from handball. Now, the season AFL average thus far in the opening round in round one is 251.8 meters gained per handball, which is remarkable, really. Which is remarkable. That's a lot. So it really speaks to what you know we're seeing in the game of those long forward handballs, and really using handballs to link up and carry and overlap run, and but in particular those really long sort of 15, 20 meter handballs, which seems to have become standard. So 251, I thought we were pretty high to 31. I was really surprised to see that the average so far is even more than that, is 251. But by way of contrast, we averaged 169 meters last year, meters gained for handballs. In this game, we were 231. So way, way above what our average was last year. And Goody was trying to implement that long handball, but clearly we've gone up a level. What was remarkable about this game, and I think it was a key factor in their inability to create space inside their 50, and maybe that's the efficiency that Lyon was talking about, is that they only had 10 metres gained from their handballs in the match. So we were plus 221 for metres gained from handballs, which is bananas, I think. And that was I think that was a big factor in, one, their inability to create space inside their 50, because that overlap run gets, you know, helps the ball get moved quickly and for zone defenses not to be able to set up. Definitely a really big factor. I mentioned before we had, time in forward half isn't as sort of influential, but we won that stat. Inside 50s, 57 to 53, we had three more shots at goals. A lot of the numbers were really, really really, really similar. You know, the outlier was that kick into forward 50 retention. So, the two outliers were the kick into forward 50 retention rate and the meters gained in total for handballs. Transition footy, obviously, this is key in modern footy. So we were pretty similar in the number of chains to scoring percentage. So chains are where you link up by hand and kick and move the ball and how often you do that. 29% of the time, 29.1 to be exact, of the time we scored from that. And they were about almost the same, 29.9 as so just a tick more than us. Defensive 50 to forward 50, 27-28, they had the slight edge. Defensive half to forward 50%, they had the slight edge as well. So they actually, on those numbers, defensive half to scoring percentage, they were up as well. So from those numbers, they did a better job at transitioning the ball, but you know, just it wasn't a sort of crazy benefit. I talked about the difference in pressure and how that's shifting the importance of it, but it still remains important, just not as important. Post-clearance contested possessions, the figure that Goodwin and Hardwick have often said is the most important stat in footy, was almost bang on. So we had 75 post-clearance contested possessions. They had 74. We had three more post-clearance ground ball gets. So again, the numbers were really similar. In terms of our clearance works, these were really interesting numbers, I thought, particularly given Maxi's apparent dominance, but that didn't really reflect in the clearances. They had five more clearances than us in total. We had two more centre clearances, 17 to 2. The stoppage clearances, they had seven more around the ground. And I need to probably have a better look at what our setups are and our structures are. But they did mention in the Channel 7 replay, watched that last night, that they're looking at moving players and extras at stoppages, and so it's hard to work that out even watching telly or live. We're down on first possession, so first possession after clearance is minus six, and almost sort of bang on first possession to clearance percentage was 73-77. We had, in terms of our defense stuff, they had two more intercepts than us, which surprised me a little bit. We had bang on the same number of intercept marks, 13 each. That's less of an important number, I would have expected, but at the AFL average thus far is 13.2. So bang on AFL average thus far for intercepts, the intercept marks. The AFL average for intercepts is 66. We only had 53. The AFL average so far this season for intercept marks is 13.2, and we had 13. We had 42 tackles inside, just one more than them. We had five tackles inside 50, probably not enough, but they only had two, so we were plus three for that. So defensively, we're very similar, and I think that something gets a big watch for us in terms of where we're, you know, how we're going to get defense. We need players with wheels. You know, we are really aggressively pushing up. It was really evident, particularly on the second replay I watched. Our D, back D, is really squeezing up when the ball was in our forward line. We're leaving a sort of anchor back, but it puts a big emphasis on defenders having the wheels to get back and defend on turnover. And I think capacity to defend turnover, obviously reducing turnover is going to be critical, and that's where ball use comes into it. But capacity to defend turnover is going to be the difference between the sides that are successful and those that aren't this season. It's really going to be critical, I think. And so a relevant point to that is equity points. Equity points is a new thing that Wheelows introduced this season. It essentially aggregates up the player rating points. Now, the player rating points I'll talk about maybe in another show about how they arrive at. I think the player rating points are the best. You know, it's a really useful tool. It's got its weaknesses. For instance, you don't score points from unrewarded running. So a player like Langdon was our least our lowest rated player, yet he ran himself into the ground and was critical in terms of our ability to do what I just mentioned then, defend turnover. But in terms of the equity points, aggregating them up is that the equity points are an aggregation of all of those player ratings. Now, as Wheelow notes on the on Demonland in that thread, that, you know, really it's sort of comparing the total number of player points, just adding them up and seeing, you know, comparing one team's versus another is not very useful, or it doesn't tell us anything. You know, the score tells us the difference between the two sides. We don't need a sort of aggregate of the player ratings to tell us that. But the way he's done it is to have a focus on breaking up the equity points into categories: pre-clearance, post-clearance, ball winning, and ball use. And all this season sort of talk a little bit about post clearance, but in particular ball winning and ball use. And so ball winning is the contested beast, like Oliver gets the footy, the Vineys, the you know, the people who win the ball and how well a team does in that aspect. In 21, it was all about that, that, you know, as I mentioned before, you won the contest in 21, you won 70-80% of the games. That's now swinging back towards ball use being more important. And I think we can all see that when we watch the games, how critical it is. You know, the best way to defend turnover is not to turn the ball over. And certainly the Saints did a good job of turning the ball over, and we were able to hurt them. We are always going to turn over the ball, so it's really about a reduction of it. But that's where, you know, even a small reduction in the number of turnovers because of a clanger it can be the difference between winning and losing. And in this game, our ball use under these equity points were 81.7 to their 68.9 plus 12.8. We used the ball better than them by both hand and foot, which is, I think, you know, for me, that's manna from heaven, and it's exactly what we need to be doing to implement the modern transition footy. We're not going to be successful without it. I've been bemoaning our lack of foot skills now for it feels like forever and a day, but for at least the last decade. So for 81.7 equity points for ball use, now, you know, any of this data in of itself in isolation is not very helpful, but, you know, why I like it is its ability to sort of use it as a comparative tool. So they were 68.9 points for ball use. So we almost 13 points better than them for how we use the football. Last year, just by way of contrast, the D's were 39.6 in that figure. So 39.6 equity points for ball use we averaged in the 25 season. In this game, 81.7. I think you can see that that's a massive improvement. You know, I can't imagine that we'd, you know, that's a really excellent ball use rate of points. So as by, again, sort of way of comparison, we were 39.6. We averaged that many equity points for how we used the ball in last season. The season average for opening round and round one thus far was 54. So we're well above the equity points for how we use the ball, which is terrific. And interestingly, for a Melbourne footy team, slightly down on the AFL average for equity points for ball winning, for actually winning the footy of how, you know, that's aggregating all the times a player wins the ball, an individual player gets points for that, aggregating that up across all 23 players gets you these, in that case, the ball winning and the ball use. So the AFL average so far opening round and round one is 111.1 points for ball winning, and we were 108. So that's, you know, for Melbourne Footy Club, that's a really unusual to be under the sort of AFL average for winning the ball, given how much emphasis we've had in the last few years on contested beasts and contested ball winners. That I think that's really an important number to look at. Just finally, I mentioned Langdon and his running. Unbelievable performance from him in that space. He ran 15.9 kilometers for the game, most of anyone on the ground. Remarkable, really. That's a, you know, hell of a lot of running, and that's the weakness of the of the ratings points is you don't get any points. It's not an involvement, unrewarded. Running is not an involvement, so therefore it's not counted towards a player's rating. But he did 15.9 kilometers in the game, which is, as I said, which is an incredible amount of running, but it was the most amount of running that he did. Just some other sort of player specific things, so that speaks to this strategy. He was also one of our best, I think second in terms of defensive running, and defensive running is defined as when the opposition has the ball. So when the Saints had the ball, I think he did, where is it now? But I think it was 8 kilometers he did of defensive running, and so that's really critical. Just finally, just to finish up, just I was really impressed with Xavier Lindsay's game watching, and it was a good example of why I like data to give me an understanding of the game. Watching the game and the replay afterwards, I was impressed with his game, but you know, I'm conscious that I really rate him, so I might have a subconscious bias because others weren't raving about his game, which surprised me a little bit. So, you know, I was really pleased to see the player ratings reflecting his performance. He was our fourth or fifth highest rated player on the ground. Our fifth, 13.4 rating points, 76% time on ground. By way of comparison, one of the things I really like about the player ratings is that it's an excellent tool for comparing players in like for like positions. So by way of comparison, Salo, who I thought played really well, had 6.3 rating points, as opposed to Xavier Lindsay's 13.4 rating points. He had 80% time on ground. Salo Howes, who I thought also played really well, is not quite like for like with Xavier, but not far off it. And his player rating was 10.1, 82% time on ground. Both players got, Salo and Howes got, seemingly got more sort of love, at least on Demonland and from what I read in the media, than Xavier Lindsay. And so, you know, I think that that again, that's the sort of points to one of the things I like about the data, to be able to, you know, unpack some of that. The other interesting thing in terms data point in terms of his comparing Xavier Lindsay's game with players playing similar roles is meters gained, because he's sort of a high half back, if for want of a better word. So a key metric for such players and the others in the team in on the weekend were CJ, Salo, and as I said, Xavier Lindsay. A key metric for rebounding halfback flanks is, and this is particularly the case in game plans such as ours, is based on winning territory and transitioning from the back half, is meters gained per meters gained in total. So Xavier Lindsay had our third most meters gained for the match. He had 418 meters gained, just a tick behind Jack Steele, who had an awesome debut for the D's. He had 449 meters gained. Now Salo, playing a very similar role to Xavier Lindsay, and this is why I like that comparison, he had 445, so just a little bit more than Xavier Lindsay. CJ, who was traded in large part for his ability to run and carry and get territory, who also had a good game, I thought, he had 325 meters gained. So Xavier Lindsay, who went about his business quietly, had almost 100 more meters gained. And, you know, I reckon King would be thrilled with his game. It'll be really interesting to see where that he ends up. You know, is he a midfielder at Gippsland, Gibby Power? He played halfback a lot. He also played midfield. I think he's a lot harder at it than people might think. I think he's got huge upside. I'm really looking forward to watching him grow over the next few seasons. But it'll be fascinating to see what his role will be when Bowser comes back in. And I'm really hoping AMW will come back in, because I think, that's an area of weakness for us, our ability to defend those small to medium forwards, particularly the Brisbane ones. They always seem to get hold of us. So, you know, since Hibbard left, he was a player who would take those sorts of players before that Jets. I think there's been a real sort of hole. I'm hoping AMW will be able to fill that hole. I won't really do in this show or this mini pod an analysis of the game coming up. We'll do that on the main pod. But just to say, I'm really looking forward to this game. Really, it will test our defense, I think. We've got a very similar philosophy, moving the ball quicker. I watched the Cats Frio game. They were dynamic in that first half. Very similar philosophy, it would seem, like moving the ball quickly, a lot of fast runners, a lot of quick movement. Our ability to defend, you know, they've got better key forwards in Tracy in particular, but Amos than the Saints do. So, you know, I'll be really fascinated to see how we defend them, and I think that will go a long way to deciding the game. I mean, they deserved favourites. They're 320 or something, and they deserve to be that. So that probably is accurate sort of reflection of the probability of us winning. But hope springs eternal, and I think that, you know, we'll get a really good sense after this weekend of where we sit vis-a-vis sort of the top six teams, for instance. So a lot to like about it. I'll do this once a week. We'll see how it goes. And certainly we'll do it during the weeks, as I said, that Andy is away and not able to do the podcast, so that there's still some Demonland content. Any questions? This no doubt Andy will post this in the stats file 226 thread. Any questions or any feedback, put it in there. Any feedback on how you'd like this structured or not, as the case may be, put it there. As I said, I'm this is, haven't really sort of structured this or planned this in a way, and we'll see how it evolves over the next few weeks. And if there's a people are keen, I'll keep doing it. So looking forward to the weekend, looking forward to the Casey game, and looking forward to the podcast next week, and looking at the numbers in this mini pod.
That was B-Man with his weekly long-form stats files from Melbourne's round one win over the Saints at the MCG. The stats files will be back again next week. We'll aim to get it out a little earlier, but this week has been a busy one. In the meantime, enjoy a few more days of still being undefeated, sitting in the wildcard section of the ladder, and hopefully we've still got plenty to celebrate by the end of the weekend. Go Demons!
Go Red Leggers!
This heart beats true for